I want to thank you for worshiping with us this morning, and we send greetings to the Golden Livingites who are also joining us. We are continuing our series of topical lessons, and this is a third part of a particular topic, which is practicing righteousness. We have been studying the concept. Righteousness is doing right things. That's this quality of being right. And the sad part is, though, we can do the right things for the wrong reason. And that's really what Jesus was focusing on in Matthew chapter 6. We saw that it's possible to give generously, yet to fall short of the expectations of God if we give for the wrong reason, like the hypocrites were doing. They would want to go out and give to be seen of men. And Jesus said, well, you have your reward. You want a glory of men? That's what you have. I'm not paying attention to what you gave. It's an unacceptable offering in God's eyes is that which gives to the glory of man and not to God. We saw the same concerning the second form of righteousness, which is prayer. A man could pray with all the right words, with the right needs and the right regularity, but if it's for the wrong reason, it doesn't really matter at that point. The hypocrites were praying to be seen of men. They would wait at the busy times during the market days to go to the busiest street, and all of a sudden during the call of prayer stand up and practice their rehearsed prayers. And these are all things that could be done today. You know, it's the only prayer that if a man came and led us in prayer at any time during the worship assembly, and that's the only prayer he prayed all week. He's praying for men at that point. I once knew a man that would pray in the King James. He didn't talk like that. He was from Texas. He talked with a southern drawl, but when it came time for prayer, Lord, whithersoever the governor listeth, you know, and it was like, you know, just, is that how you pray to God? Pray to God like he's God, you know. And I did ask him why he does that, and he did admit to me that that was about the only time he prays is when it comes time. And I said, that's not what God wants from us. But I want to cover the topic of fasting this morning, because Jesus wasn't done talking about the practicing of righteousness. There's the wrong way to fast, Matthew 6, verse 16. Whenever you fast, do not put on a gloomy face, as the hypocrites do, for they neglect their appearance in order to be seen as fasting by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. Now, notice Jesus doesn't say, moreover, he says, moreover, if, he doesn't say, if you fast, he says, when you fast. It appears that Jesus doesn't only expect us to give. He says, moreover, when you give. Moreover, when you pray. He expects us to pray. He says, moreover, when you fast. It's almost a foregone conclusion that fasting is part of a Christian's life. Now, this is an area of the modern that the modern-day Christian has been neglecting. I saw a poll a few years ago that that less than 40% of professed Christians have ever fasted in their life for spiritual reasons. Yeah, they had to fast for the cholesterol test or something, or for a surgery, but not for spiritual reasons. In fact, throughout the Brotherhood, most churches do not even teach fasting as part of a well-balanced spiritual diet. It's just neglected. It's, well, we're not supposed to do that. Jesus doesn't command us to do that. Show me the Bible verse where it says, well, we're going to have lots of Bible verses about this. I think there's a terrible price we pay when we neglect this area of our lives. Is it something that we should consider for our own lives? In order to appreciate what Jesus said concerning fasting, we must go back to the history in which this environment was produced. There were three types of fasting which were common to the people of Israel. Number one, fasting to draw attention of God to the individual. David fasted in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 16, to show the seriousness of his repentance. King Ahab fasted to show his pain over the death of the Baal prophets in 1 Kings 21, 27. Daniel fasted for a personal answer to God over a situation he was in. In Daniel chapter 9, verse 3, we have many examples of individuals carrying out personal fast for their personal relationship or their perceived relationship with God, as in Ahab's case. But then there was another way: fasting to draw the attention of God on behalf of a group of people or the nation. The nation fasted in Judges 20:26 over the devastation of the tribe of Benjamin when they were nearly wiped out. In 1 Samuel 7:6, we saw the prophet Samuel call for a national fast in the face of all that Baal worship that was going on. We also see there was a national fasting over the death of Jonathan and Saul in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 2. God called for the nation to fast in sackcloth and ashes in Joel chapter 2, verse 12. The entire people of Israel fasted in the face of annihilation in Esther chapter 4, verse 3. You go fast for 3 days, and this also we will do. They were facing total destruction from the enemy on February 25th, and they prepared for that with fasting. In Acts 14, we find the congregation fasting and praying for the appointment of elders. So we see many examples, and I could have gone on and on and on again about groups of people fasting on behalf of the nation or the church or on behalf of a group of people. But then there's a third thing that Jesus refers to. That was fasting to draw the attention of man. And this was for a vicarious reason, to turn the attention from God to man. And this type of fasting Jesus condemned in Matthew 6. You see, under the law, there was only one mandatory fast, and that was on the Day of Atonement, Leviticus 16, verse 31. And there were many that would fast for righteous reasons throughout the Bible, but there were others who sought that for the glory of God. And see, during Jesus' ministry, there were two market days in Jerusalem, Mondays and Thursdays. That was the time where you went into town to do all your trading, buy what you need to have, and then return back to your home. And this happened to certain self-righteous Jews, i.e. Pharisees, some Sadducees. They would go ahead and they would do their fasting on that day, and they would rub powder on their face to look real pale. They would rub dirt in their garments like they were being really neglectful to themselves on behalf of God. And then they would go and parade themselves in their demonstration of piety. Oftentimes they would do their little prayer rituals as well, so that all the country bumpkins who would come in to buy some spelt or whatever they were coming in to buy, they would see these Pharisees dressed up, very pale, praying. They're so righteous. These guys are serious about God. But God saw through all that. God said, "You're fools. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. You want the glory of man?" God says, "I'm not even going to listen to you. Your prayers, your fast, your giving, worthless. It has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you." And that's a dangerous situation. And you don't think that we could be guilty of the same thing today? Jesus, his message is for all people of all time, because all people can mess up. And so, what did Jesus say is a solution to this? That when you're fasting, to not draw attention to yourself. Matthew 6, 17, 18. "But you, when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, so that you may not be seen fasting by men, but by your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees you in secret will repay you." Think about that. Something as simple as, you know, don't let it change your day from the standpoint of the outward appearance. Don't try to be fake. Make this a personal thing with God. In the same way the Pharisees were to give in secret, pray in secret, they are also to fast in secret. If you decide to give a boost to your prayer life, you decide you're going to fast, but you're struggling with drawing attention to yourself and away from God, Jesus offers that sound advice. Do it in secret. If that's where you're weak, do it in secret, period. Don't go out and say, I have fasted. Look at me. That's not going to do you any good. You might as well go to Burger King and go get a double Whopper with cheese, lots of onions, satisfy that appetite, because you might as well reward yourself in some way, because you're not going to get anything from God. And though there are many reasons to fast, the key thing to understand is it's not to present ourselves in a way that draws attention to ourselves. If we fasted for the rest of our life, which would be stupid because it would end soon, if it were for the reason of drawing attention to ourselves, it profits nothing in your spiritual life. It actually works against you. If, however, we fast for the right spiritual reasons, presenting ourselves to God in the proper way, the rewards will open up from the portals of heaven and pour down on us with great joy. Let's talk about some of those rewards for a second. Most of these are natural benefits of the practice of fasting. Just like there are natural curses if we don't follow God, there's natural blessings when we do, and that applies to fasting. For example, number one, health. Your overall health. Now this may sound like an oxymoron, but fasting is a part of a well-balanced diet. Can you believe that? It's part of a well-balanced diet. When fasting, we give our body a break. Digesting food it takes a lot of work to do that. There's a lot of conditions related to God didn't design our digestive system to constantly be digesting, constantly in that mode. If when you go eat a cheeseburger and then you go on a treadmill and you get dizzy, that's because your body is fighting for the blood to digest the food at the same time your body's fighting for oxygen to keep your muscles going. And then you get dizzy and you sit down, drink a Gatorade, and you go back to it. Well, that's your body fighting against you. It's scientifically proven that the body strengthens through fasting. Weight is better maintained. Food is better digested. The immune system strengthens. Senses are awakened. And the overall well-being of the individual is increased when one practices fasting. So it is part of a well-balanced diet. You know, we live in a world where half the world doesn't have enough to eat and the other half is eating all the other part of it. I mean, that's how we live. I remember the first time that we went to India. I never saw so many skinny people. I mean, like my leg was bigger than them. And I mean, if you go to a lot of different places of the world, you know, we're eating like Ehud or something. I mean, we're huge. We are absolutely huge in the way that we eat. And food can dominate us in such a way. But when we practice fasting, it starts pulling that back into perspective. God gives us something called hunger pangs. You remember hunger pangs, don't you? Sounds like Chewbacca. Luke Skywalker says, yes, what is it? Those are natural mechanisms in your body that call for food. If you're not hearing that prior to eating, you're not hungry. You're not hungry. I didn't invent the hunger pang. God did. It's in our DNA. It's time for food. But then we ignore that. And then we stack food up on top of that. And Chewbacca never ever gets a say in our life. It's just not healthy. Here's another thing. Discipline. Now, why would this be? Because as you realize, food is a natural daily desire of the human body. It is. Even a little tiny baby, you know, They know it's time to eat. You know, they didn't have to go to school and say, you're going to have to learn to eat. No, they're crying. They're crying for food. That's one of the three things on their mind. Is food is the number one thing when they're born. It's already baked into the DNA. So when engaging in a battle over the natural desire of the body, one can then become able to buffet their body. Yeah, that word is buffet. Paul says, I buffet my body. That wasn't buffet, okay? That was buffet. It's discipline. Just like lifting weights and working out strengthen the body, fasting sets the foundation to strengthen the will. Look at the situations and struggles in our life, how much better they would be. Look at the drug addict. If he was struggling with drugs and he learned the discipline through fasting, how much his life would change. Or maybe somebody else struggles in another area of their life and they earn discipline and they're fasting. When Chewbacca is saying, I want food, and say, no, I'm going to learn discipline in my body. I'm going to deny my body over things that my body wants. And then what happens is the discipline is built, just like a weightlifter can build up strength, just like a long-distance runner can do that. What if the person who struggles with poor language were to use strength drawn from fasting? I bet you that mouse could come under control a lot better. What might change in the life of a brother or sister with self-control issues if they were to practice fasting? Try it. Watch out. You'll see what happens. We would receive the reward of better self-control. And then number three, appreciation. Appreciation. Paul commands the Christian in 1 Timothy 6 verse 8. He says, in having food and raiment or covering, therewith let us be content. He draws a natural line at the bare necessities of life as food and clothing. Food and clothing. Notice he didn't say the iPad. He didn't say the Xbox. He didn't say the Roth 40A or IRA and the 401K. He didn't say the car, the home. You think about all these other things that we have in this life. You could get by just on food and covering. What about a home? Ask a homeless person who's living. He has food and clothing. And a lot of the people in the world live with just that. And Paul is recognizing the common fact that we all should have already learned. Food and covering. Now when we step across that line and say, okay, I'm going to withhold even something that is a bare necessity, then there's a greater sense of appreciation. Now, we all can't practice going without clothes. First of all, I don't want to see that in the church. Okay? This isn't a nudist colony. We lean on the side of modesty. And if we all show up to church naked, I ain't coming. Okay? I'm over 50. There's areas that I don't want to be seen anymore. But the bottom line is fasting, that's the side that we can go without. We step across that line just for a moment. For a short time, we go without food. Chewbacca cries out to us. We combine it with prayer. And guess what? We earn an appreciation for what we have at that moment. We do. I remember many years ago, before I was even a Christian, I was studying the Bible aloud. I was on my search to become a Christian. And I went on a 3-day fast. Okay, I'd never fasted before. But I was determined I was going to go 3-day fast. I was working a security detail. I was doing a DTEX clock key round. And like I was at the other end of like a 100-yard warehouse. And like I'm thinking about food all the time. Like, look at that. Going through the lunchroom, I realized how many people waste food. I mean, that crust, the people who didn't eat the crust, I was thinking about crust that day. Now, the reason I tell you, I was walking that warehouse, and at the end of that warehouse, like 100 yards away, I thought I saw a green M&M in the corner. I did. And as I got closer, I said, that is a green M&M. And it's the one with the peanut. Okay? Somebody let a green M&M fall into the corner. A dog could have eaten it or something. And here I am envious of that M&M. And I realized at that point, dude, we are so blessed about having food. We can't all just go on a trip to India and we'll go view starving people. Okay, they're there. Trust me. We can't go just all get up and go to Africa. I can tell you, Arby and Don, when they're in Africa, you go to certain places, you're going to see people who are absolutely starved. And that's sad. But we all can go through a fast and experience their hunger for a night. We can have that appreciation for that. Paul emphasizes this very thing. Look at, Paul says, 2 Corinthians 6, verse 10. He says, having nothing, he says, and having nothing yet possessing all things. There were times that Paul was absolutely broke and starved. This is the point he was making in Philippians chapter 4, 12 and 13. Open your Bible up to that. Philippians chapter 4, 12 and 13. Listen to what Paul says. I know how to get along in humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret. Underline the secret. Okay? There's a secret. Shh. Underline that. I'm serious. If you got a Bible, it's a workbook. Okay? The secret. What's the secret, Paul? The secret of being filled and going hungry. The secret of being filled and going hungry. Having abundance and suffering need. You still don't have the secret, though. He said there's a secret in that. And here's what it is. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I can do all things. You want to know how Paul learned that secret? Paul grew up in great prosperity. He studied at the feet of Gamaliel. He was the upcoming scribe. He probably would have been the one to take over for Gamaliel. And yet Paul chose a life of Christianity which went contrary to the Sanhedrin. And because of that, he was experiencing some things. Oh, he had abundance, but he also suffered need. He was filled, but boy, that stomach. Chewbacca called on him many times. When you stretch yourself, how many get up in the morning and stretch? If you don't, you really should get up in the morning and stretch. Okay? Because the reason why is when you stretch your physical body, it's able to withstand things that might come up during the day. If I don't stretch and I reach through the car window to grab something, it feels like a broken guitar string or something. You stretch, I'm ready for the day. When you stretch yourself spiritually, then you're ready to take on any circumstance. We want to be able to say, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Take the same path that Paul did. Go without eating for a day or two. And then go back and eat. You're going to appreciate God more. You're going to appreciate the blessings that he has. And you're going to realize that God even sustains you when you don't even eat. He's baked it right into our DNA. It's through the same reason that we can excel as well. And so, I want to leave you with this challenge. A really simple challenge. There are just a few, those are just a few rewards that God gives us naturally if we follow that path. In order to learn more, you just simply have to buckle down and do it. I would like to challenge each and every person here, if their health permits it, fast. Take one day this week and fast. And fast. Fast for all the people struggling with cancer in our congregation. Just don't pray for them. Put a fast with it. And really focus on behalf of some other individuals. Fast on behalf of your family. Fast on behalf of you. Draw near to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Experience the many rewards that God would have you to have. Don't be like that 60% of the people who proclaim Christianity and never try on something like that. Please do that. Just try it. And then go celebrate after that. I remember a brother and I, a long time ago, he was a recovering methamphetamine addict. And one of the things we did is we fasted together. And we fasted for the other people. And we would pray for people. And at the end of 5 days, we went out and ate at a fine Italian restaurant because we didn't spend any money on food all week. And we celebrated because things worked out for those people. But do it for the right reasons. Please do that. You give, you pray, you fast. If you practice those things, God designs that for us to have a greater joy, peace, and happiness that He wants us to experience in our life. It's already hard being a Christian. Might as well do it for credit. Think about those things while we stand and sing.